John and I always talk about what's happening. And John, I said to John, or I emailed John and said, what have you got? What have we got news-wise? And there isn't actually a lot of recent local stuff. Sometimes we could talk all morning about things. John's list is kind of short. The first thing on it is the Whatawhata roundabout at the intersection of State Highway 23 and State Highway 39. When's that going to happen, John?
Well, we've now got a report in the Regional Transport Committee agenda for a week or so ago, was it? No, yesterday rather, sorry. Which says the feasibility study is complete. This project has progressed to detailed design and pre-technical investigation and survey work is being scoped. Engagement with key stakeholders, Mana Whenua and the community, will soon be carried out. So your guess is as good as mine as to how long that's going to take.
Waka Kotahi, they make, I mean, we know bureaucracies don't move fast, but they are spectacularly slow. They make the council look manic. Really. So, and yeah, and because we've got other issues with them with the Greenslade Road intersection. Greenslade?
Yep.
Greenslade, yes, I keep getting them and government road mixed up. And that's going to require, that's going to be several years before that gets sorted out.
It all depends what priority they put on things. The Waikato Expressway that they opened 3 years late was only started in 2015. So they can progress things fairly quickly, even when they get COVID delays and such like.
Well, this roundabout at Whatawhata, I know that our mayor got involved and tried to create some publicity around that, which was...
Well, it's been talked about ever since I came to Raglan over 20 years ago.
So. Yeah, but not at Waka Kotahi. They're like, no, it doesn't meet our criteria. They're not doing it.
Roads
of national significance got to be done first.
In those days, they said they weren't going to do it because it slowed traffic down too much and that offset the safety improvements.
Oh, but now it's all about safety and speed be damned.
Yes.
As anyone trying to drive around anything other than the motorways will have worked out by now. So, all right. So that's a story. Progress is happening. I think it will happen, but it's just be patient, folks.
Yeah, and you were talking about the speed reviews, and yes, the other thing that they've got on their agenda, or the other thing relevant to Raglan on their agenda, is the Waka Kotahi is working through changes required to the speed review process following the introduction of the setting of speed limit rules 2022 and hopes to rapidly progress speed reviews at the end of this year. Beginning of 2023. So
using the word rapidly there. they've already done an engagement and now they have to do another engagement, consultation. Like they know, and like I actually emailed them and said, can you give us some answers to this? And they've said it's been really clear. Like there was all along State Highway 23, there were varying opinions about whether the speed limit should be maintained or reduced, except for outside the intersection with Government Road, where universally people said we need to reduce speed around this corner. They're still going out for more engagement, just in case.
Yep. As I say, they seem to progress some things relatively quickly and other things relatively slowly, and I can't help suspecting that maybe they're hoping a new government will be in by the time they've reviewed this one again, and the new government will have less of a focus on safety and more of a focus on speed. So.
Well, it was the previous national government that brought in roads of national significance, and I don't think this government's... Well, no, have they done much about that or not?
Well, they've carried on spending at much the same rate that national was.
But what on?
Well, on roads of national significance. So that's why we've got the Hamilton Expressway just opened and we've got the Transmission Gully opened a month or so before that. So
I wonder if people going down Transmission Gully can't find their exit as well. Have you noticed the complaints on Facebook about that?
No. I talked to my daughter who's finally driven over it and she remarked on the climb up to the top of it and wasn't surprised when I said it took more fuel to go over Transmission Gully.
You're
than
talking about
it
Transmission Gully.
Old...
I want to talk about the lack of signs to Raglan on State Highway 1.
Yes.
I was actually out of town when they changed it, when the new motorway was opened, and I came back and it was just I was in a state of panic for about a minute trying to work out what the signs meant, because it said I was looking at it, we got Taupō and Hamilton exits. So I was like, what does that mean? And then it was New Plymouth to the left. I was like, New Plymouth, you don't go to the left to get to New Plymouth from here. So in the last second, I made the right choice, but it was kind of like a momentary decision. And lots of people haven't made the right choice is what I'm picking up. But yeah, look for New Plymouth, folks. That's the way to back to Raglan.
We'll start using Google Maps and it will tell you which way to go.
You didn't think, well, I didn't know I needed to use it because I didn't know it was going to, no, I sort of did know it was going to be open, but yeah, I wasn't ready. Anyway, there's a lot of moaning, but that's, we'll all learn, I guess.
Well, and most of us have got phones in our pockets, and most of our phones will use Google Maps. So I always find that the easiest way to get anywhere. You stick it in your pocket, and it says turn left, turn right.
Yeah, I know. But I think people felt like they knew where they were going and then were caught out. So I had to make a decision. All right. So that's some transport news there. We've had the headline, or we've got the headline here, Raglan Airfield land to be returned to rightful owners. That information came out last week. Decision was made at council to begin the process, which, John, it looks like a very convoluted, complicated process with, well, lots of things for lawyers to do.
Well, this is another one that seems to be a government body that's not too keen to hurry it along, because they didn't actually hold a meeting with the HAPU until the 6th of July.
Who's they?
So, they being council. So, because it says the discussion began in March 2022, which is, what, 3 months after they put up the fence and a March long time before they started considering anything else.
But I checked my notes. In March 2021, I was at the community board meeting where a council staff member was told to start investigating how the land could be returned. And that was also part of a staff recommendation in the agenda for the Raglan Community Board that day.
Yep.
So that's when they start. That's when they theoretically started. Admittedly, the guy who they told to do that left, which is always a problem that happens at council.
Especially this council, it seems, yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to someone about – I was talking to Jenny, who's one of our DJs who works at Waipa District, and she said it, part of the issue is just because Waipa, Hamilton, and Waikato District Council – they're all. You can all just live in Hamilton, work at all three. So for staff, it's quite easy to. You've done enough here, or go and work at the other council next. And if I've done that one, or there's still another one to go and try. And by that point, everything's changed at the first one you're at, so you can go back there. It's kind of.
And you get promoted each time you change.
Yeah, and a pay rise, yeah, which of course everybody likes. So yeah, so this is so the intention what has been there.
But it was a year later that they actually. Held the first discussion, and it then says at a hui held on 6th of July this year, it was agreed that there was general support. So,
well, we knew there was general support. I couldn't find anyone. I did see one person on Facebook who was dropping slight hints that the airfield could stay in council's control, but a pretty universal agreement amongst people that it should be returned to the rightful owners.
Yeah, it seems to me that the problem on lots of these things is that people don't know the history, and if some people know the history and others don't, then they end up with different conclusions from the same current facts.
There's a little piece of the history that I'm like the council agenda had the history in it, but there's a little piece that I'm missing. Like in 1987, when the golf course was returned to after Eva Rickard's movement. Began and the golf course was returned. Why was the airfield not returned at that time?
Because it was still an airfield, so they considered that an operational airfield, whereas the golf course was surplus to their requirements, even though it was not a military airfield, which is, of course, its original function.
So I guess it's easier to divest themselves of a golf course than... Well, but obviously they can divest themselves of an airfield because it's actually... We're just going to do it now. Yep. Like, there's no one who thinks that shouldn't... Well, I keep saying no one. Not many people who think that it shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Well, what I just said isn't a very good excuse. My honest answer is that I don't really understand.
Yeah, I think the honest answer might be the fact that it was an airfield was an excuse to not give it back. Because that was like... That was one of the first pieces of land to be returned in the movement. Like Bastion Point and the Raglan golf course were the two things that I remember from my childhood of being protests, and all the older people in my life were quite concerned, older white people were quite concerned about this newfound radicalism. I used to hear about it a lot.
Yeah, so maybe they thought giving the whole lot was going a bit too far too.
Yes.
Satisfy most public opinion.
Yes, just going a bit too far. Yeah. So anyway, wrongs are eventually righted sometimes.
Well, we haven't got there yet. So.
No. But I did notice, like, reading the council agenda, there was an awful lot of, like, it actually said that they didn't know, like, as they worked through the process, they didn't actually know what stuff that would come up that they would have to deal with in a legal sense. I don't know why, but, yeah. I'm just like making it clear that it's not going to change tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, it surprises me that they employ so many people and yet they seem to struggle more than some amateurs do with these issues of what they can and can't do. And
I think they're very scared to say, make a statement like, this is what we're doing. I think there's a lot of caution around that. It's easy for us to say, yes, this is what you should do because we don't have to do it. We don't feel that sense of caution. They obviously feel a big sense of caution around it, scared of putting their foot wrong and being a headline in the Herald.
So maybe that's a question for potential new councillors as to what they're going to do about that and how they can find a way around it, whether there is a way around it.
That's a cultural thing, eh? That's hard, like a council culture. Anyway, so that's happening.
We've also got the election coming up, so one of the things I hadn't spotted was that every council produces a pre-election report to tell potential councillors what they're in for.
Okay, in case there's any nasty debts that they might want to know about. Are there any nasty debts, John?
Well, they've got the major spending items listed, so I hadn't seen a figure on the cost of them before, but we've got the Wenera walkway, which we keep puzzling over the name of it, because it's really the walkway from the jetty around to the footbridge. It's called the Wenera walkway, and that's apparently $750,000 that they've got allocated for that.
What can you do with $750,000 these days? Probably not that much.
Rebuild a walkway, which has only got 5 years life in it, according to the report that they got from the engineers.
Yeah, I've heard an engineer informally tell me that all they need to do is pour some more concrete back in the areas where there's no concrete. That's not an official statement by anybody, and that person would not thank me for mentioning their name on the air, so we won't be doing that. But there is another problem, John, which is that they've created this bike path, walk path, all the way from Wainui Reserve, and it delivers people across the walk bridge, and a lot more people are now coming across there, and all of a sudden there's the narrow walkway with no railing on it. And I've also heard, and I need to check this out, apparently quite a lot of people fall off it. That's what I've heard. And we just don't know.
And it seems rather odd that you don't get reports on that. So the reports don't seem to appear on Facebook. They don't appear in the media. They don't appear on council reports.
Well, no, of course not, because then you'd have to do something about it, John.
So next time somebody falls off, put it on Facebook at least.
Maybe people are too embarrassed. I would be. I wouldn't. That's the last thing I would do, John.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe those who see them fall off, or maybe the problem is nobody does see them fall off, which is why at least one person drowned.
Right. Well, but that wasn't from the walkway. That was from the bridge. Are you talking about the...
No, this is the walkway. It was about 10 years ago, but... and the rumour was that he was drunk at the time, but...
Hold on, why is this not in my memory banks?
Because it doesn't get much publicity for reasons understand.
When people die, there's public. Everyone knows, usually. Are you sure about this, John? Someone fell off the side there, sloped, and drowned.
Well, it certainly appeared in a report once, but I don't actually know who it was.
I just feel cautious about it. See, I feel cautious about saying that over the air in case that it worries me that I haven't heard about it before. Not that my memory's, that flash.
Yeah. But maybe even the relatives of dead people feel embarrassed about publicising it if their relative was drunk when they fell off.
You don't want to. Well, you don't. You just don't want to be. When someone's died in your family, you don't want to be in the news for any reason. Really, it's never a good thing.
Yep. $750,000 being spent on that. Another.
Yeah.
Just over $500,000 has been spent on this building, the Raglan Town Hall, the municipal buildings.
To meet the new building standards, so when there's an earthquake, all those parapet walls don't fall on my head.
Yep.
Yeah, John's looking up at the ceiling nervously now. You hadn't thought about that, had you?
I'm just looking at all that plasterwork above your head, yes.
Yeah, well, that won't hurt.
Maybe you want to change your chair.
That won't hurt nearly as much as the concrete parapet walls if they fall over.
Or wear a helmet when you're doing your
broadcasting. I don't know what would... Those are big lumps of concrete. I think I'd just be flattened, frankly. Can we move on? What else?
And there's also a couple of $1 million allocated for car park renewals, which I think means resurfacing them, which seems an awful lot of money to be spending on resurfacing car parks. But
depends how many there are. The area is called the Old School Car Park. You need to resurface it.
Well, this
and
is
I think
the whole district, so...
Yeah, so that won't actually go that far. I think the Old School one is being done, I heard mentioned previously, but I don't have any details on it.
So that's where my $20 a week goes to. Have you looked at your rates bill and seen how much you're paying for roading?
No, I don't. I don't look at that, John.
Mine says I'm paying just over $20 a week for roading.
Is that all? I thought like roading was like the major expense that the council had.
That means I'm paying about $1,100 a year for roading.
Oh, sorry, $20 per week. Sorry, yeah. I wasn't listening. Right, yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, all right. So that's the pre-election report, the little pickings there that John's picked up. Is there a date on that spending, though? Like obviously, the We Nearer walkway, that's in process. I think that's going to happen in the normal speed of things. The town hall money, when's that going to be spent?
It doesn't give any dates for these, but so presumably it's sometime in the next 3 years, which these councillors are being elected for.
Is there a government requirement for buildings of a certain age to meet standards by a certain time?
Yes, but I can't remember what.
I thought it was like a long way in the future.
We're in a low-risk zone, which means that priority in Raglan is less than the rest of the district.
Is it different? I haven't looked at that map.
Yeah, it's more risky if you live in Narrowa here or Huntley.
Yeah, but still not high risk like
it's
Wellington.
Still medium risk.
Yeah, you're not like Wellington. Yeah. Okay. There's that. Should we mention the whole mayoral campaign, John? Not going to be for the first time in the entire 33 years of the Waikato District Council's existence, we won't be having a mayor who's a farmer by the end of this year.
Okay, I hadn't realised that.
Yes, all previous three mayors were farmers, and none of the four people standing are farmers.
Okay, maybe that shows how many people are flooding into a district who aren't farmers as well.
Well, it's a very different district. Like when Alan Sanson was first elected, I don't think we had all that stuff up north, did we, from the Franklin district?
No.
So that's been added to it since then, and that population up there has grown dramatically. So I think it's changed from being very much a rural-dominated district to one that's got more urban area anyway.
Even before, it was about half and half, but the Huntley bit of it never seemed to take any part in what happened in any local politics, or at least the majority of people in Huntley. Well, the majority of people in the district, but especially in Huntley.
They always talked about there being this kind of rural power base for like Alan Sanson as a mayor and previous mayors and kind of in the middle of the district, but I think that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
But still, there still is a power base there, but...
it's going to be interesting to see what they've got to say at the Meet the Candidates, which is coming up.
Yes.
They're only for the mayoral candidates and they...
No, there's another one. There's another one being planned as well.
Okay.
Because the first one...
Do we have a date and time for that yet?
I was talking to someone yesterday. I think it's the 18th, just as the voting papers will be arriving in your letterbox. Yeah, yeah. Well, they had to organise another. Someone had to organise another one because the first one that was organised didn't have community board members or regional councillors at it. So it was just, I was just hoping someone would do it, so we didn't have to, John.
Yeah, good.
I was like telling people in the hope that someone would pick it up, and it happened. So yeah. So when's the first one?
Without looking at my notes, I've forgotten. But
okay.
I think it's a week on Saturday, isn't it?
I don't know.
Or is it this Saturday? I can't remember offhand.
No. Actually, we should find out. Should we take a little break? It is past 12, and we'll actually find out some factual information, which will be an interesting thing for us to do for a change, and be back soon.
Hey, Mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Hey, Mom, you can't put that in your green bin.
You wanted me to recycle.
But you can't recycle everything.
How am I supposed to know what's what?
It's easy. Extreme Zero Waste has a recycling guide. It even tells you to wash and squash your milk bottles and remove your wine bottle lids.
All right, where can we get this guide?
They have them at the Recycle Centre, Whangaroo Environment Centre or on their website.
Cool. Better put one on our fridge and one above our rubbish bin.
Tune in live and direct every Tuesday, 1:30 to 3 Aotearoa afternoons and 9:30 to 11 NYC Monday evenings across 110th Street. Beats, Ritmos and Stoops with DJ Benny L.
Right here, 98.1 on your FM dial. Live streaming at raglanradio.com and podcasting each week at across110th street.podomatic.com.
This is not the BBC.
Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron and John, and I have just done our research. John, when is the first candidate evening?
Tuesday, the 6th of September at 7:30 in the supper room to meet the mayor and council candidates for Raglan.
Okay, so it's just those two. And then the one that I think is on the 18th, but I haven't received official confirmation yet, that'll be for all the candidates, mayor, councillor, community board, Māori wards as well, and the regional council. But not the Māori ward for the regional council, because only Tupu Mahuta ran for that, so she's automatically in. No need to vote for that one. And what else can we say about predictions for the election, John? For the mayoral? Let's just do the punditry for the mayoral election.
I need to go back to my notes on how many candidates there are. I can't even remember.
There's
that.
Four. There's Axel Beck, the current deputy mayor. Is it Jackie Church from up north? And is that her name?
Yes.
John Rā Pūriri from Raglan, and Korikori Hawkins, who's from Ngarawahia, I think.
Okay, you're doing better than me. I couldn't remember.
This is pretty rare, isn't it, when I remember stuff and John hasn't? But I think it's because I've been trying to email them. So
you're going to be interviewing them on the radio?
That's the idea.
You hope.
Yeah, I've had a yes from Rā and from Axel. I need to chase up the other two, although I know that Jackie will want to, because she's already emailed the station when she started her campaign, when she announced her campaign. But predictions, John?
Well, Axel's got the benefit of being the deputy mayor and well known around the district for promoting the blueprint.
Yeah.
So I think he's got an advantage, and he's the only one I've seen with signs up around the area.
Yeah.
But signs don't always mean much these days, because most people get their information from something other than billboards.
Well, having said that, most of the people who vote in local body elections are the people who don't spend much time on Facebook. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's all going to depend how many extra people or how many fewer people vote this time, because as we've kept mentioning, only about a third of people vote or have been voting traditionally in Waikato District.
I know people have been trying to. People have been saying, "Well, look, this is a with all the ward boundaries shifting, and a new mayor coming, and it could be quite a chance for a sea change at Waikato District Council,
and two new Māori seats as well."
Yeah, yeah.
Even though they're underrepresented, there's still two who weren't there before.
Yeah, and I think our ward, the Raglan one, which is now going to be called the Whangaroa ward, and is an extended one. That's the one that's the closest to the old boundaries. Like, because we're down sort of in the corner of the district, everyone else has had quite substantial changes.
Yep, they've chopped off one corner and added on another corner, so it's not much different. And both the corners they've chopped off with fairly low population density.
Mm. So, and I think that's the reason Councillor Noel Smith is running for regional council instead of district council this time, because his voting base, his electorate, has completely evaporated. So do you think this will bring a sweeping change to the district or not? That's probably a bit dramatic, John.
Well, I think it depends how much publicity these candidates can create and whether any of them look as though they're worth voting for, and they're clearly different from others. Because I know that even though I've got a fair amount of information on things, probably more than the average person, I still struggle
definitely more than
to
the
decide
average
how to vote.
Yeah, I was interested that Axel Beck, I've seen his campaign signs, and he says vote for progressive leadership or something like that. He uses the word progressive. And one of the things I've always said about Axel is he has the ability to connect, build relationships with people from all around the political spectrum. I was surprised that he has put progressive as this big word on his billboard, because a lot of people will see that as code for left-wing stuff. Not conservative, and traditionally it has been a conservative electorate, and I'm kind of curious about that. Why we think he might have done that?
Well, as you say, the balance is changing, and I think his hope must be that he's going to get out some of those two-thirds who don't vote, and by actually appearing different and being clearly different, then that's presumably a strategy, but maybe we'll find out more at maybe, the candidates.
Maybe it's a strategy, or maybe he thinks the job's not worth having unless he's got a mandate to actually come in and do things differently and be progressive, as you know, and rather than just try and maintain the system as it's always been and just make small changes here and there where they, you know, refinements. I mean, certainly I've been saying, like we talked about the housing crisis and the way that we were treated, you and I and Gabriel Parsons were treated during the district plan review, where basically all our suggestions were ignored by the people up the chain and with the belief that the commissioners wouldn't want to see big change either. And I've said I get that their job is to make sure everything runs smoothly within the bureaucracy so it doesn't kind of grind to a halt because it's dysfunctional, but we're in a crisis now, and so actually wholesale changes are probably going to have to be the solution to a crisis. Incremental changes aren't going to do it. So I don't know. I haven't yet talked with Axel about that, but maybe that's what he's thinking. It's a stab in the dark from me, to be honest.
Yeah, but there's still lots of people who've got their head in the sand and don't want to know that anything's changing outside.
Yeah, that's the thing. And is there a big enough clamour for change? Like, there will be a clamour for change. If there hadn't been the COVID-19, the pandemic, I think Labor would have got swept aside from the fact that they didn't do anything and have not done anything substantial about the housing crisis. Like, it's got to become destabilising for a government one day at some point. I don't know when. These things are hard to predict, but it must become destabilising.
Yep, because Axel's been involved with things like that and with things like the sewage here in Raglan, so he's been chairing that subcommittee.
Okay.
He's been getting himself well known around the whole district.
Yeah.
And he's not just sort of casually turned up at meetings the way that Pamela Storey seems to be doing now that the election's coming close, but he's actually been involved in the sort of hour or two of discussion and leading it and encouraging it. And my only gripe with him is that he wouldn't do the same with the airfield, because I think the airfield could have made faster progress if he'd got involved back in the end of last year, which he refused to do.
I think everyone was people were ducking for cover, and our councillor Lisa Thompson has made the point that the issue of the land, it's a relationship between the Crown and local hapu, and the council is a little bit outside of that.
Except that the report we were referring to earlier suggests that the council is central to it and they had to refer it to the Crown to get anything done.
Well, I think if council had done nothing, what would have happened is that the Waitangi Tribunal process, when we've got the report and now local iwi are talking with Andrew Little to negotiate what's going to be done, like, I think that would have kept going and the land would have been returned anyway. How long that process takes, I don't know. It seems to be very slow. Anything with the Waitangi Tribunal seems to take a heck of a long time, but they get there in the end. So I think it would have happened, and I think probably that's what everyone at council really hoped would be the case, that they wouldn't have to worry about it. But again, this is conjecture, right? I know it would have been returned. It couldn't have not been returned. The injustice was so clear. But the speed of it is the bit, and my thoughts about what's happening inside council, that's conjecture.
Okay. So do you know much about the candidates who are standing? Because we've talked about Axel Beck quite a bit, and Jackie Church is the councillor, so we've had some idea of what she's been doing, but fairly limited experience of what she's been doing.
Do you want to know if I know more than you? All I will have got read is her campaign thing, which you've
read,
and I don't remember. Do you remember?
She promising? My complaint about lots of these things is that they are so bland that they don't really tell you anything. So that's my guess as to why Axel is trying to be different and stand out from that rather confusing lack of information that other candidates tend to give you, that, you know, they've got 2.5 children and they've been on council for zillions of years and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so Jackie Church, third term Waikato District Councillor for Pukenua Tuakau and the rural area bordering Auckland. So she might have quite the voting base up there. Business owner, mum to 2 adult children, people-based values, John. tell us what those
whatever
are.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
That's what I say. There's these sort of bland phrases which don't really mean anything.
She acknowledges Whangaroa for being at the forefront of progressive thinking, sustainable community action, and inclusiveness. And she,
whatever that means.
Yeah. Well, she's pushing buttons for Raglan there, right? And she called us Whangaroa rather than Raglan as well, so that suggests some
slight awareness.
Yeah, some awareness, which is good. That's good. But also growing rural towns, farming areas, backbone of the economy, et cetera, et cetera. Which you've got to say as well, because that is part of the district. So, but yeah, what did we learn? Not much, but I will be interviewing her.
And that's the value of the meet the candidates. You can actually ask them and judge by how they either answer the questions or dodge the questions as to how good they might be.
Korikori Hawkins is based in Ngarawahia, and I did interview her 3 years ago because she ran for mayor.
Yeah, she's
then
standing
as well.
For mayor again, whereas the other candidates haven't stood for mayor before.
Yeah, so I don't remember too much. I don't remember the interview from 3 years ago.
Shame on you.
So obviously she's looking to... I do have vague memories that she was looking to kind of bring out the Māori vote, basically.
Yeah, but I'm as bad as you. I don't remember it either. So.
Yeah, and her... Well, I don't know if it was her sister or cousin. I apologise for this. Rongo Kirkwood was running for...
against Noel Smith in the Newcastle ward.
Did she?
Fota, yeah.
Okay.
He was running against Noel Smith.
I'm talking about a woman called Rongo Kirkwood.
Oh, okay.
Who ran for the community somewhere around Ngarawahia and Huntly. This is all terribly vague and a bit useless. I'm trying to give you all the information I have about Korikori Hawkins. It's obviously not a lot. We will interview her and find out. And Rā Pūrere, we know, he's a DJ at the station, well known for campaigning against the airfield fence with Alan Fink.
Yep. I'm still trying to find out what else he stands for apart from closing the airfield.
Well, there's a website with a lot of technical stuff about local body things.
Okay, so
have you not read that, John?
That.
Have you not read it? I didn't read it that closely, but I seem to have remembered more than you again. This is twice this morning that I've remembered more than you about something.
Yeah, well, maybe it shows the advantage of interviewing people that you actually recall things more.
No, I don't, but I haven't, have I?
Which is why I can recall things from the past, because I did lots of interviews in those days, whereas you've largely taken over that role. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but you do have a phenomenal memory for details, John. I've got to say, like, I'd be a bit lost. I couldn't have, what would I do on Tuesday mornings?
But I can't remember my own phone number, so some things I can remember. And
I was going to add that. I know. I actually know that. I was about to say it, then I realised we're on the air, so that's a bit impolite. Okay, so that's the election. You would say that Axel Beck has the inside running, but it is hard to know. And we don't do polling in our district, so it's nigh on impossible to...
Yep. And as we've discussed before, it's a problem of how much people get to find out about it. So, and there's going to be, 30 or 40 people along at the candidates' meetings, if we're lucky. Whereas there's, 2,000 plus voters, so, you know.
Well, we're going to help them out, though, John, because I'm trying to interview every candidate for every position, and so the podcast will be available, and we're going to make a transcript available as well.
But we've done surveys of how many people listen to the radio, and that's probably about a third of Raglan, so which is better than the meeting. But.
Hence the transcript. Right, and also I know that people aren't going to listen all the way through to every interview and every podcast, except maybe you and me, because I'm doing them. So just us two. But the transcript is far quicker to read, and the vote was up a little bit in Raglan last year.
Yes.
3 years ago,
2019. Yeah,
yeah. So maybe we'll take some credit for the publicity we did around that. I was basically spamming the notice board coming up to the election with podcasts. So even if no one listened to them, it still reminded them that the election was on.
Well, that's why we're here, because it does make a difference. But I'm just saying it's a small difference, and there's still the great majority, about two-thirds, who aren't going to know much about any of the candidates.
Yeah, I know. And when I was younger, I was not that interested myself. So I get it. What else are we going to talk about, John? We've got the...
Well, there's also community board members or people standing to be community board members.
Oh, okay.
Some of those, I haven't even heard the names before, but I noticed one's a DJ on the radio. So
Jason, yes.
I ought to listen to the radio more.
He does the Your Health, Your Choice show, Alternative Health Info. It's basically where he's coming from. Other names, new names, Ross Wallace from the rural area, I believe. Selena Coombs, I don't know. Who was the fourth one that was running? We're not looking at a list. I'm relying on my memory, which is always a mistake.
Looking through the list, we've got the existing community board members, Tony Houston, Dennis Amore, Kerry Binnersley, Chris Rayner and Satnam Baines.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, we've got Selena Coombs, Jason Marinovich, Michelle Levy.
Oh, yes.
Which is the one I think you couldn't remember, and Ross Wallace.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I know very little about the new people. Whether they're standing on some sort of ticket or whether they just decided suddenly they're interested in local politics when, as far as I'm aware, we've not seen most of them at any community board meetings. So I don't know whether they know what they're in for or what they're aiming to achieve.
Mm. Well, again, we'll talk to them. My predictions are usually, I would say, like, name recognition clearly plays quite a big role in getting elected. So if you're already on the community board, you are probably going to get elected back in, unless you've really upset a lot of people. But this time, of course, the community board boundary has been extended to include Ruapuke, Te Mata and Te Uku. So there will be a lot more rural voters. And I think I would, based purely on that, knowing nothing else, I would say Ross Wallace stands a good chance of being elected because of that. I know Dennis Amore lives in town these days, but he's from a rural background, and the rural community do know that, so they'd likely be pleased to see him in there as well. These are my predictions based on very limited knowledge at this stage. You got anything you want to argue with that, John, or agree with it? Or
I was just going to sort of move on to a related subject, which is to say that when they are elected, they're going to have the wharf issues to deal with. And we've got a bit more information come out about the wharf.
Oh, you've been asking questions of staff at council about why the Western Walkway was the thing that was dropped off when they couldn't afford something?
Yes. They got $2.5 million from Shane Jones's provincial growth fund.
Yes.
And so they thought that was ample money, and they came up with all sorts of projects.
And then, as we know, inflation, especially in the building industry, is a bit of an issue.
So they've decided that they can't afford the Western Walkway, and my question was, why can't they afford the Western Walkway when they can afford the rest of it? Why has that been dropped?
Why that one? And yeah. What was the answer you were given?
The answer is that it wasn't specified in the $2.5 million funding that they got from the government.
Okay.
Whereas they're claiming the others were, whereas my claim is that that's in the safety part of that government agreement. And that the others aren't in safety. So
they're saying the government is quite strict about, if you said you're going to spend the money on this, you have to spend it on this.
Well, they're saying that if they went back to the government, they might lose their funding altogether. So they're saying they don't want to do that, whereas it seems to me that it would be odd if government was saying, yes, spend it on something which we don't really need and which is going to add to the problems of parking at the wharf. Don't spend it on safety issues, which, and what they're not spending it on is the only part of that project that they consulted fairly well on back in February. You might remember that asked us where we wanted the steps on that Western Walkway, whether we wanted them near the Dolphin on the pier or whether we wanted them near Wallace Street.
So maybe that safety aspect means that particular thing has more chance of getting funding from somewhere else. Because we've got the government's given their... what did the CEO of Waikato District Council call it? He just called it outright bribe.
It was the Chief Operating Officer.
Chief Operating
Officer. CEO, yeah.
Oh, who, yeah. Which one's that?
Tony Whitaker.
Tony Whitaker.
At the last community board meeting,
It's funny because...
I think jokingly described it as a bribe.
But usually bureaucrat guys like him are very careful with their language. We say, yeah, it's a bribe.
But it's true, if councils sign up to the Three Waters plan of the government, then they get this funding.
Which is $7 million for our district?
$7 million this year with the promise of more to come, yes.
Right, okay.
So the applications for that closed on Friday, so they're looking at those applications this week.
And they had to be, Lisa said, they had to be projects that they already were planning to do. They couldn't just pull things out of the air. So that Western Walkway definitely is something that they've got lots of documentation to show they were planning. So,
yep,
so perhaps that will, and they can wave the safety banner, John. This is what I was trying to say. Yeah. So we need to do this for safety purposes. So
that might come out of this and gain the funding from that.
Yeah, and I don't know whether they need. It hasn't been clear to me whether the amount of the cost of things, like there might still be a bit of money left over that can go to that walkway bit anyway from the government fund, the provincial growth fund. I don't know. Do you know that? They might not need to get all of it. I guess we'll find out in due course. Do you think
there are some other issues down there as well, like cutting the Puhutukawa? So one of my other questions is, why do we need to cut the Puhutukawa, which is just beyond the Wharf on the as you go towards Lorenzen Bay?
Why do is that part of the creating access to the new
pontoon? Yeah.
Okay, so your head doesn't get brushed by the leaves.
My question is, why doesn't it go further out as a direct diagonal line from the jetty across to the new pontoon?
I think it's
rather than hug the Puhutukawa trees where you have to chop at them.
All I can say, John, is that they've already designed it and negotiated the contract, so it's happening.
Well, this maybe shows that they should have done some more consultation on that.
They've still got to get
resource consent for it yet.
Like they did, I suppose, yeah. They did consult with stakeholders. There was a stakeholder group of people who used that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe people who weren't too worried about the odd few branches on a Puhutukawa tree, yeah.
Perhaps. I feel like that's a foregone conclusion, though. Although, as you say, the resource consent might put some requirements on there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But trimming a tree doesn't sound like that big a deal to resource consent.
I said chopping a few branches, but virtually all the lower branches are going to be chopped off it. So, and that's one of the few Puhutukawas around town that hasn't had major surgery done on it. So,
do you think the construction firms allowed for security for the contractors who'll be cutting the the trees when the inevitable protest starts, when it goes out on Facebook, they're cutting Puhutukawa trees down by the wharf, and everyone rushes round?
Well, the time to protest is now, or probably a few months ago, before we actually knew what was proposed.
So that's the story there. I was just wondering whether you think, I don't know if you've been paying too much attention to the Three Waters thing, whether the government bribe will work.
Increasingly councils are coming around to it, and it's, most of us think that something needs to be done about our water pollution. So, and one of the solutions is the Three Waters, probably. And discussed before that Watercare seems to be managing our water in Waikato District rather better than Waikato District Council ever did.
Yeah, I think of all, normally our council is a Conservative council and the last one to get on board. They want to see what all the other councils are doing before they make a change. Uh-huh. But they've had such a positive experience with Watercare that, do you feel like our council is it'll probably be fine? A bit more like that? Or is there misgivings as well?
They have signed up to it. That's why they've got their $7.2 million.
They've definitely signed up. Okay, yeah.
So, it was also portrayed jokingly as a bribe, so... Yeah.
Well, yeah.
There is that element to it.
Yeah, it is. Clearly it is. The government's doing what they can to get it over the line. I guess by moving it out of council control into government control, and councils are struggling to fund what needs to be done. And this is a problem in the whole of the Western world. And I don't know about other countries, but that's enough to be going on with, that money was invested in these kind of services, the Three Waters, 40 years ago, and they were good. And then they've gradually been declining as councils have been trying to spend less and less, and there's been a focus on lowering rates. And now councils the biggest problem is that councils don't have enough money to do the work properly. And it's very hard for them to raise more money. I think it's probably easier for government to raise more money. But, John, is the government actually... So, in the big... Actually, here's the important question. Everyone's arguing about who's in control of what, and is this a Māori power grab versus, that kind of... that racist angle as well. But is the government actually going to spend more money on our three water systems to make them work properly?
Well, I think that's the whole point of taking it on to government, that government spends the great bulk of public spending in this country. So
couldn't they just give the money to the councils? Why do they feel the need to control it?
Well, I think their worry is that if they give it, then they're going to have to monitor what each council's doing, because some are more committed to sorting out the problems than others.
So they don't trust the councils. And how many councils are there?
Over 70.
Right, okay. And there have been places like, was it Kaipara District Council? They've got itself in a monstrous financial hole.
Over its sewage scheme.
Yeah, exactly. That problem there. So, all right, they don't trust the local body.
Yep. Because coming back to the wharf.
John.
One of the other problems with it is that, as I see it, is that it doesn't actually sort out the parking problem down at the wharf.
No, of course not.
It provides an extra 6 cycle parking spaces, but otherwise the parking spaces remain as at present.
There is never going to be enough parking at the wharf.
Well, it depends what else you do.
Unless you remove the wharf, and then there's no reason for people to go there, then there will be enough parking.
If you provide parking somewhere else and you provide alternative bus or walking or cycling ways of getting to the wharf, then you can sort that out.
They are providing a bus,
which will probably run once an hour with 12 seats. Scarcely going to sort that out, even if the bus is full on every trip. 12 cars an hour and not parking there and not parking in the CBD and not parking out at Whale Bay.
So you think we should
all trying to cram on that bus.
Do you think the bus is a waste of time, John?
It's not a waste of time. It's a good start, but it is only a start and it's not going to be the solution, or at least not on its own.
Yeah.
If it ran every 5 or 10 minutes or something and still had 12 seats, it'd probably be okay. But
my suggestion was charge an arm and a leg for boat ramp fees.
Yeah.
That would clear out like a really high price. That it's not a serious suggestion, boaties out there who are listening, but that would solve the parking problem. And I did think, you know what I did think? Actually, something that's a little bit more serious. I thought there should be tiered fees for the parking. If you're a ratepayer, then you shouldn't have to pay as much as someone from out of town for the boat ramp fees. Because we always had the suspicion that more boaties were coming here because there was no boat ramp fees compared to most of the ramps around the North Island.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons everything's so parked up. Yeah, and now they park on soccer fields as well. Thank you very much with the boat trailers. So.
And we still haven't got any boat ramp fees, even though it's been discussed for well over a year.
It's in process, though, isn't it?
Well, I believe it when I see it. But, yeah, I mean, that's another of the issues for our new councillors and community board to deal with.
Oh, any potential community board members out there listening, Roger McCulloch, one of the council managers, when this first came up, did talk about at a community board meeting about the money from the boat ramp fees going to the community board to spend. So they had some money to spend on local projects. That mustn't be forgotten about. That's actually quite important.
And also at the last community board meeting, it was suggested that the community board ought to be asking for more powers to deal with things like parks and other local issues.
Yeah, and this is in the model of the Thames Coromandel District Council. We don't have time to talk about it now, but basically any decision that can reasonably be made at community board level is made at community board level, because the local knowledge is it saves a lot of problems happening.
Yep.
Mistakes being made.
And we've just got past the top of the hour. So
we have.
Can I just finally mention one of the other issues that I'm concerned about?
Okay, right. We'll squeeze it in.
And that's the survey that found that there were all sorts of heavy metals in the sediments down there.
Yeah.
And there was a warning in that report that stirring them up would create pollution elsewhere. So they needed to come up with some plan to avoid doing that. I've asked for what the plan is, and so far I've not seen it. So I'm hoping I'm going to get one and that they are going to sort it out.
Yeah, I'm right now my brain's trying to feverishly imagine what sort of crazy schemes you do to stop sediments being disrupted and washed all around the harbour. And crazy is the key word with what I've come up with.
I think you need to put some sort of screen around it to make sure that if you are driving in a pile or something, you're not getting clouds of polluted sediment spreading off to the rest of the harbour.
Yeah, and the question is, has that been allowed for on the contract or not?
Well, that's why I'm asking these questions, and so far I've not had an answer, but hopefully next time I talk to you, I might.
Yeah, and maybe the resource consent that the regional council is doing, well, they'll specify they have to do something in that regard. But we shall see.
It's still waiting for the regional council decision on the resource consent, so that could well, hopefully will be one of the conditions.
Okay. All right, yes, John, thank you for coming in. Time for us to go. You're on the air tonight at 6.
Yep.
replaying my interviews again?
You haven't done many this week, so I think I'm going to play one which I've been trying to play for the last, well, I recorded at the end of July, and I've so far only played about 20 minutes of talking to our local freshwater fish scientist, Bruno David, and also brewer, local brewer as well.
Yeah, I want to interview him as well. I've only done one interview this week, John, because it's Tuesday, but I know what you mean. Last week I didn't do any political interviews, any local politics information, but don't worry, your thirst for politics will be satisfied. From the 5th of September, I'm going to go full steam ahead interviewing candidates.